Chapter 10, The Seventh Principle, Compassion. Quote, true compassion is more than flinging a coin to a beggar. It understands that an edifice which produces beggars needs restructuring. Unquote. That's Martin Luther King Jr. There's a widely told story that speaks to the value of compassion. It seems that a woman who lived a Tao-centered life came upon a precious stone while sitting by the banks of a running stream in the mountains, and she placed this highly valued item in her bag. The next day, a hungry traveler approached the woman and asked for something to eat. As she reached into her bag for a crust of bread, the traveler saw the precious stone and imagined how it would provide him with financial security for the remainder of his life. He asked the woman to give the treasure to him, and she did, along with some food. He left ecstatic over his good fortune and the knowledge that he was now secure. A few days later, the traveler returned and handed back the stone to the wise woman. "I've been thinking," he told her. "Although I know how valuable this is, I'm returning it to you in the hopes that you could give me something even more precious." "What would that be?" the woman inquired. "Please give me what you have within yourself that enabled you to give me that stone," said the man. The woman in this story was living her life from a sacred place of compassion, which is the seventh and last principle for an excuses-begone life. Compassion and excuses. It's impossible to need excuses when the focus of life shifts to how may I serve. Thinking of others first, reaching out to them despite how it might inconvenience you, causes you to feel joy, which is what the hungry traveler was actually seeking. This gift of feeling good or feeling God within comes from serving and surrendering rather than asking and demanding. There's no room for blame in your life as long as you live with kindness. And excuses, regardless of their form, are all about blame. Blaming your past, blaming the economy, blaming your perceived personal flaws, blaming God, blaming your parents, blaming your children or your spouse, blaming your DNA. There's no shortage of circumstances, people, and events to blame, and there's no shortage of blame itself. When you shift to compassion, blame disappears. So no matter what you may want for yourself, discover how you can want it more for someone else and then make that shift. In that contemplative moment, compassion will eradicate finger-pointing and trump excuse-making. And you'll begin to think like God thinks, serving, offering, giving, and loving freely. The wise woman in the mountains who gave the precious stone to a stranger had no need to think about poverty or unhappiness, to hold a cynical view toward the greedy masses, or to explain the way she lived her life. Why? Because her ego was out of the picture, and love and service reigned supreme. I've certainly found that when I remember to nurture kindness and courtesy, everything in my life seems to move towards more harmony and peace, to say nothing of how much better I feel when I'm giving rather than wanting. I heard the Dalai Lama speak on compassion some years back, and the essence of his message contained these two points. One, that compassion is the single most important quality that humanity needs to learn. This is the way to find happiness and health and to feel successful. And two, that war and violence would become extinct in one generation if, beginning at the age of 5, children were taught to meditate on compassion for an hour a week for the rest of their lives. Such is the power of a compassionate approach to life, which is truly thinking of others and living by the ancient golden rule. The very second you feel yourself retreating to excuses, repeat the mantra, "How may I serve?" Then act upon the answers you receive. You'll become aligned with universal mind, which is always giving, and the bonus is that you'll notice the universe asking you back, "How may I serve you?" As your compassion for others flows back to you, remember the truth I've written about many times in this book. You do not attract what you want. You attract what you are. So make compassion be what you are. Three questions. For the past several years, I've celebrated Father's Day in a way that reflects what this chapter is about. I give special gifts to my 8 children rather than receiving presents from them. Being a father is one of the greatest privileges that I've enjoyed for more than 40 years. I consider it an incredible honor as well as a sacred undertaking to parent my 6 beautiful girls and my 2 handsome sons. So it's my wish to thank them for choosing me as their dad and for allowing me to play this glorious role in their lives. I think of the responsibility of raising and supporting a child as an amazing gift because to be able to fully support another human being is as close to being in a place of God realization as there is. After all, when God contemplates us into existence, doesn't he or she support us and allow the free will to choose a compassionate existence? This past Father's Day, my gift to my children was a copy of Leo Tolstoy's short story, Three Questions. Tolstoy tells of a king who was certain that if he just knew the best time to act, the right people to listen to, and above all, the most important thing to do at all times, he'd never fail in anything he might undertake. So he proclaimed that he would bountifully reward anyone in his kingdom who could teach him the answer to these three questions. Many learned men came to see the king, but since they all responded differently and he didn't agree with any of them, none of these men were rewarded. But the king still greatly desired to have his three questions answered, so he decided to consult a hermit who was widely known for his wisdom. The reclusive old man only received common folk, so the king put on simple clothes, left his bodyguards, and dismounted from his horse and went to see him by himself. When the disguised king reached the hermit, he asked him his three questions, but the elder fellow didn't answer. Noting that the hermit was very frail and attempting to dig some flower beds, the king took over, shoveling earth for hours. When he attempted his questions again, the hermit noticed a bearded man running out of the woods, holding his hands over a profusely bleeding wound in his abdomen. The hermit and the king took the bearded man inside and tended to him. The next morning, the man asked the king to forgive him, even though the ruler was certain he'd never even seen this man before. The injured man explained, "You do not know me, but I know you. I am that enemy of yours who swore to avenge himself on you because you executed his brother and seized his property. I knew you had gone alone to see the hermit, and I resolved to kill you on your way back. But the day passed, and you did not return. So I came out from my ambush to find you, and I came upon your bodyguards, and they recognized me and wounded me. I escaped from them, but should have bled to death had you not dressed my wound. I wished to kill you, and you have saved my life. Now, if I live, and if you wish it, I will serve you as your most faithful slave, and will bid my sons do the same. Forgive me." The king not only forgave him, but he also said that he'd send his servants and his own physician to attend to the man, and he promised to give him back the property that had been taken from him. At that point, the king went outside and saw the hermit placing seeds in the beds he'd dug the day before. He decided to ask the old sage his three questions one final time, and was surprised when the elderly fellow responded that his queries had already been answered.
"How answered? What do you mean?" asked the king.
"Do you not see?" replied the hermit. "If you had not pitied my weakness yesterday and had not dug those beds for me, but had gone your way, that man would have attacked you and you would have been repented of not having stayed with me. So the most important time was when you were digging the beds, and I was the most important man, and to do me good was your most important business. Afterwards, when that man ran to us, the most important time was when you were attending to him. For if you had not bound up his wounds, he would have died without having made peace with you. So he was the most important man, and what you did for him was your most important business. Remember, then, there is only one time that is important. Now, it is the most important time because it's the only time when we have any power. The most necessary man is he with whom you are, for no man knows whether he will ever have dealings with anyone else. And the most important affair is to do him good, because for that purpose alone was man sent into this life." Now let's go over the three questions as they pertain to your living from a place of compassion. As you listen to this section, think about the lessons that the king learned from his wise teacher, the hermit, as well as what can be taken from the example of the wise woman who gave away her precious stone to a traveler. 1. What is the best time to do each thing? Both the hermit and the wise woman understood what Tolstoy meant when he wrote, quote, "Remember, then, there is only one time that is important. Now, it is the most important time because it is the only time when we have any power," unquote. You may recall that the third excuses be gone principle explained that compassion can only be experienced in this current moment. Now is where everything takes place. So your relationship to life is truly your relationship to the present moment. I love the definition of compassion offered by historian Arnold Toynbee, quote, "Compassion is the desire that moves the individual self to widen the scope of its self-concern to embrace the whole of the universal self," unquote. In any given moment of your life, when you embrace another beyond any concern for yourself, you are living compassion. You're also making it impossible to employ excuses. Thus, you now know the secret that Tolstoy's king sought and the wise woman knew instinctively. This is the time to widen your scope beyond self-concern and embrace a universal self that includes everyone, especially the person who is before you.
Can you imagine that compassionate woman or wise hermit coming up with an excuse for life not working at the level they liked? Be like them and recognize that this moment is your power. Seize it and extend compassion without regard for yourself. And remember that your appointment with life is always in the present. 2. Who are the most important people to work with? We often hear about and respond to the importance of offering assistance to others in drastic need in faraway places. As we try to work towards bringing about world peace, we join organizations dedicated to improving the lives of those who are most needy. Yet this doesn't answer this second question adequately. Whoever is in your immediate space is the most important person for you to work with, be it friend, family member, co-worker, or total stranger. Therefore, extend kindness to whomever you see before you. As Tolstoy reminds you, you can't know that you'll ever have dealings with anyone else. This is your moment, and the person to work with is right here. The wise woman understood this well. She wasn't saving the precious stone for herself, for someone more deserving, or for a relative. She gave her gift, which came from her compassionate heart, to a person she'd never met before. So the lesson is, don't look beyond the moment. Now is a perfect opportunity. Whoever is in your presence is the one who is available for your compassion. As the Vietnamese master Thich Nhat Hanh once observed, if you cannot make your own child happy, how do you expect to be able to make anyone else happy? If all our friends in the peace movement or of service communities of any kind do not love and help one another, whom can we love and help? Are we working for other humans, or are we just working for the name of an organization? And 3, what is the most important thing to do at all times? The compassionate actions of the hermit and the wise woman show that they both knew the answer to this question very well. Tolstoy concludes 3 questions by explaining why compassionate action toward the person in the moment is so highly esteemed. Because for that purpose alone was man sent into this life, he said. As we learned in the last chapter, doing good is the equivalent of doing God. We're not here to conquer others, to wage war, to build towering temples to our deities, to become number one, to win anything or defeat anyone. No, we are here to be like God, or to be good, to serve, to reach out, to allow, not interfere, and be humble wherever we go. Give your ego a rest and live compassionately by being a decent human being. The king learned this when he let go of his importance. By simply doing good, he saved his own life. And the woman in the mountains was able to teach an ego-driven man how to be happy by a simple demonstration of goodness. Allow me to conclude this chapter by telling you another story, this one concerning myself and my daughter Summer. As I was driving her to the airport for her return to college after a long weekend home, she was admiring my new watch. Now, this was the first new timepiece I'd had in at least a decade. I really enjoyed looking at its shiny steel and black face as I did. I'd think about how this was my favorite watch of all time. Yet I knew in my heart that Summer would love to wear it, since men's watches seemed to be the current craze for young women. As I dropped my daughter off at the curb and assisted her with her luggage, I was prompted to remove the watch and give it to her, even though it was my most prized possession, particularly since I had almost no possessions any longer that I even care about, let alone prize. Summer's response was, "No, Dad, no, Dad," she said, "you love this watch." I insisted, telling her that I'd feel greater joy by giving it to her and knowing she'd treasure it. I also said that I felt it would symbolize our staying together in time, even though we'd be thousands of miles apart. She boarded her plane glowing, and I left feeling that I had grown immeasurably as a person, since such a compassionate act would have been very difficult, if not impossible, for me several years ago. Summer called me in Maui a few months later to tell me that she was sending me a present for Father's Day, stressing that it was a very, very special gift. It turned out to be her all-time favorite painting that she'd created and had hung in her apartment for a long time. As she told me later, "I really learned something the day you gave me your beloved watch, and I want to give you something that's my single most precious item. I'm giving it to you, Dad, even though it's difficult to part with, because I want you to have a piece of me that I love with you." The painting hangs proudly on my wall as a symbol of the beauty and perfection of reaching out compassionately in response to a felt moment. This personal story epitomizes and personalizes the response to Tolstoy's 3 questions. Number 1, do it now, the only moment available. 2, do it with the person you're with in the moment. And 3, do good, because that's why you're here. By being and living compassion, you invite and encourage others, just by your example, to choose to do the same. Suggestions for living from compassion. First, upon awakening, let the words
"Thank you" flow from your lips, for this will remind you to begin your day with gratitude and compassion. Make it a practice to begin each day by thinking first of someone else and then making a decision to actively do something, anything, that will bring a smile to his or her face. When you become conscious of wanting to do something kind for another human being, you move into a higher place, correction, you move into a higher way of being. It takes your thoughts off of yourself and what's in it for me and puts them on, how may I serve? Which is precisely how the universal mind we call the Tao or God is always operating. When you're aligned with a compassionate outlook, your entire day will reflect this kind of awareness. Here are some suggestions to get you started. Email a note of appreciation. Say a kind word to one of your children with whom you've been having harsh words. Apologize to an individual you've needed to make amends with. Pick a few wildflowers and hand them to someone. Give away some personal items such as books or jewelry. Or send a smile towards someone that might brighten his or her moment. The point is that it doesn't have to cost money. What you're doing is aligning with compassion and thereby setting up your day to work in this way. Whenever you find yourself employing one of your personally familiar excuses, you can stop yourself in mid-thought and immediately shift to the person you showed such humanity toward. Note how excuses disintegrate when your thoughts are on being kind toward others. You needn't restrict your opening act of compassion to a person. All acts of kindness toward any of God's creatures, even if it's just picking up some trash that was carelessly discarded, impacts our planet. The point is to set your mind on serving and off of your ego's demands. And secondly, in the quote that opens this chapter, Martin Luther King Jr. suggests that our culture needs restructuring and that compassion is the way. I urge you to work towards electing people to public office at all levels who relate sensitivity and kindness in their messages to the public. Attitudes of compassion take into consideration men and women who are involved in concerns of immigration, torture, sexual orientation, religious persuasion, and socioeconomic status. There can be no exceptions here. Look for the compassionate heart, rather than the one that excludes, punishes, seeks revenge, or manipulates with government power. The more our institutions reflect this humane attitude, the fewer collective excuses we will call upon to explain why we haven't been able to create the heaven on earth that is our true calling. And third, as I've stated in each of the seven principles in this program, the active repetition of an inner mantra reinforces and creates exactly what you're saying to yourself. Thus, repeat the following to yourself for at least 5 minutes. Quote, I am a being of compassion. I extend love outward everywhere because this is my nature. Unquote. Affirm this to yourself continually and post it in a prominent place in your home, your office, or even your car. In the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus gives us the ultimate words of compassion. If our world today would put them into practice, we'd all be living in peace. But even if the rest of the world hasn't yet caught on, you can. I urge you to put these words of Jesus to work in your daily life. If you do, all excuses will most certainly vanish. Quote, ye have heard that it hath been said, thou shalt love thy neighbor and hate thine enemy. But I say unto you, love your enemies, bless them that curse you, do good to them that hate you, and pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you. Matthew 5:43-44. This is compassion in action.